Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this July 21st, 2023. Have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 10:30, we're welcoming in our friend Katie Wright from the Heart of Wisconsin Chamber of Commerce. Looking forward to catching up with Katie and all the great things going on with our chamber. Right now, joining us on the phone, Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston. Good morning, sir.
Happy Friday, James. How are you?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Well, great. Just starting off a beautiful Friday morning here in the Village of Clover with Representative Katrina Shanklin. We're at the recognize the public service for Karen Swanson, who's worked for the Village of Clover for 37 years, and more importantly, has spent over 20 years, I believe it was about 25 years, working as the village clerk. And so just wanted to recognize her accomplishments and her public service. And so Representative Shanklin and I presented her with a citation of accommodation for her years of service to the village.
That is really cool. And thank you for sharing that with us, sir. And I wish her a great retirement. She's earned it.
Oh, absolutely well deserved. And I think it speaks volumes. So we've done a number of these now over the last few years. And it seems as though individuals who get hired by the Village of Clover, they spend the majority of their careers here. And I think it's a testament to a great environment, a great leadership, a great community. And so it's always important for us to recognize those accomplishments because it's a big deal. I think anyone that's willing to, you know, put themselves out into the public arena, and especially for our clerks in recent years where there's been a lot of consternation and division as it relates to how elections are administered, they had to put up with a lot. In fact, I had a conversation with Karen as I was getting ready to leave. I'm like, I almost jokingly wanted to get you a sympathy card just saying, hey, sorry for everything you've had to put up with these last few years, because it hasn't been easy, I'm sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. I want to talk the budget with you. I want to talk about the agricultural export program and a little bit of the U.S. Open, some other things. Before we dive into that, actually, I'm pulling an audible. I worked from last weekend on this interview, like I always do when you and I or Representative Krug or Shanklin joins us. These are the interviews that I probably work the hardest on and maybe overthink a little bit. But I'm pulling an audible here, sir, because I've been wanting to talk to you about transportation. And for those that didn't see, the Wisconsin DOT envisioned an intriguing multi-model transportation system that maximizes the safe and efficient movement of people and products throughout the state in a way that enhances economic productivity. We talk transportation from time to time in this state, oftentimes with the roads or that sort of thing. Every once in a while, Amtrak will come up or something like that. Do you think we're getting closer and closer to something like that being a thing up and down the state?
Yeah, it remains to be seen. I mean, there were some conversations preliminarily and ideas for potential projects down the road. But I think, you know, at least as related to this particular budget, our main emphasis was making sure that our existing infrastructure gets brought up to par. And I think that's one of the primary reasons why you saw within the legislative budget that we sent to the governor, you know, we've put an additional $100 million into the local road improvement program. And more importantly, $150 million in a similar program related for our agricultural heavy-used roads. And so, you know, for areas in potato and vegetable country, cranberry country, this is a big deal because we want to make sure that our farm-to-market roads don't fall behind. And then on top of that, you know, we've provided a 2% increase into mass transit and also a 2% increase for general transportation aids, making sure money goes back to our local communities for them to ensure that their infrastructure is up to par. And so, you know, I think one of the big issues that we're going to have to continue to kind of deal with and address, and, you know, is there a conversation in the future for things like more mass transit or high-speed rail? I'm sure that we're going to continue to have those conversations and, you know, trying to make sure that, you know, we have a transportation fund that remains in the black and is evolving with the changes of new vehicles and new technologies that are coming online in the market.
You bring up something there, sir, and we're going to dive right into the budget. You segued us perfectly into that. One of the things that I noticed with what you just said there is something similar to something else I wanted to bring up. You mentioned our main focus with this budget was taking care of what we already got, our infrastructure and that. Well, recently, in talking about the budget, there was a comment from you, and I was standing next to a couple of Wisconsinites during this, and you had mentioned about bringing in more people from out of state. that it was important for the future of Wisconsin to bring in a more, you know, if people like me, transplants and that sort of thing. And I don't disagree with that part of it. I don't think the people I was standing next to were. But the comment right away from somebody next to me, a gentleman in his 70s, well, what about us? And I'm curious, how do you balance trying to bring new people into the state while keeping the people we have? Because it has been noteworthy that since, you know, the pandemic, Wisconsin is one of the states that has lost people. Not the most in the state. There's plenty of states that have lost more people in recent years. But that's something that's important, not only on a state level, but on a city level. It's something Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Shane Blazer and I talk about keeping people in town. How are you balancing that?
Well, I think first and foremost, one of the best ways to not only help individuals who currently live here, but also to attract individuals from outside of the state is through tax reform. And that was one of the primary and biggest driving forces that, you know, we worked on within the tax cut that we had put together within this budget, was that it was going to impact every taxpayer here in the state, regardless of whether you make $10,000 a year or if you make $100 million a year, making sure that, you know, we're doing what we can to be more competitive. Because not only can people make their voices heard at a ballot box, but one of the most consequential votes an individual can make is with their feet. And when you take a look at the 2020 census data, the states that saw the largest increases of people moving into them were places like Florida, Tennessee, Texas, South Dakota. These are states that either have no income tax or they have a much more competitive or a flatter tax rate compared to states like New York, California. And when you take a look at the states that saw the largest out-migration, they were states like New York, California, and even Illinois. And, you know, what's ironic about this is that, you know, granted, the governor did veto a significant portion of the tax cut proposal that we sent to him, about 95% of it. And he cited that, you know, he doesn't want us to take us on a path to a flat tax, and he doesn't want to touch the top marginal tax bracket, which, you know, that's his purview. That's his right with his line item veto. But the irony in that is that, you know, as you're well aware, James, Illinois is a flat tax. And in 2020, there was a ballot initiative to do away with that and put in place a progressive income tax. Yet the voters they rejected that resoundingly, while at the same time still carrying a state that went for President Joe Biden by 18 percentage points. So I think if we want to be competitive, if we want to grow, we need to make sure that we have a tax structure that reflects that, similar to other states that have seen significant growth. So, you know, this is going to be one of those areas that we have a difference of opinion greatly from, you know, the Evers administration and some of my Democratic colleagues in the legislature. But from my perspective, that's how we grow, and that's how we also provide significant relief for those who currently live here in the state.
Knowing some people that were not in favor of that Illinois bill that you're talking about there, the biggest fear, I think, for most, and those people that I'm talking about, and really in general, is the idea of, well, okay, we're going to give tax breaks to everybody, and that's understood, but everybody includes people in the upper echelon, people in the top 5%. And the fear, the hope, but that weird combination of, well, if they are charged less tax-wise, that's going to trickle down, when we have not seen that in our human history economically. So I think there's a fear there with that. But there's certainly other ends of this, too, when it comes to, how about the literacy bill? Let's touch on that, the Governor Ener signing the sweeping literacy bill there. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, very supportive. I mean, I think we're trying to get back to the basics here. And again, this was another piece of legislation that was negotiated between legislative leadership, Republican leadership, and the legislature and the governor's office, and having a phonics-based system again, and really trying to get back to the basics. Because, you know, we have some districts here in the state, some of our larger districts, where literacy it's quite poor. And I think one of the best things that you can provide a child with a strong foundation for future success is the ability to read. And so, you know, I supported the bill. I'm glad the governor signed it. I know there are some folks within the education world who weren't necessarily thrilled, but again, I think we've got to get back to the basics and, you know, teach kids the fundamentals and make sure that they're getting brought up to speed. Because if they fall behind, well, that's only going to get worse as they move further down their academic career, whether it's in K-12 or, you know, post-secondary. And so I think it's a step in the right direction.
when it comes to childcare, how are you guys talking about that behind the scenes, you and your colleagues? Is that something that is continuing to be talked about and worked on?
I think it has to be, and I'll be the first to admit I wish we would have done more. Now, not to say we didn't do anything there, but you know, obviously, since we took up the budget and took up the Department of Children and Families, I've heard from a lot of providers. I think every single office has, is that this continues to remain a major concern for parents and employers across the state. And so my hope is now that, you know, we know we've got a lot more money left over in the general fund with some of the governor's vetoes, that maybe we can revisit this in the fall. But I think more importantly, we have to find a better model for childcare in the state, because essentially what was proposed with the Child Care Accounts program would amount to basically putting a Band-Aid on a broken leg. Sure, it may help in the short term, but we're not really addressing the fundamental root problems and issues that are being faced in childcare. And I think first and foremost is compensation for providers. You know, our early childhood educators, they're woefully underpaid compared to their counterparts in K-12 education. And we got to find a way to, you know, deal with that discrepancy. And then also other things that we can do from a regulatory standpoint that will ease up on some of these bottlenecks and hopefully potentially open up more slots. Now, having worked in a child care center for one day back in May at the child care center at UWSP, you know, I don't know if there's a whole lot you can do as far as the ratios, as far as educators to kids, but I do think there are some other things that we can take a look at that might provide some relief and still ensure that we have quality child care providers here in the state without, you know, diminishing the level of care. But it's one of those I think we're going to have to continue to dive into and get stakeholders at the table to see if there are some different approaches that we can take to address the problem.
The legislature budget included a recent bill about the agricultural export program. I want to talk a little bit about that. Can you tell people what that is?
Yeah, so this builds upon investments in a previous budget. So again, trying to identify new markets and opportunities to take Wisconsin egg-based products to places outside of Wisconsin and in other countries. And so, you know, hopefully we'll continue to bolster our egg economy here. Another area that was in the budget, you know, we were able to secure funds for the Farm and for the Future Foundation based in Plover, which again, I think is going to help create a talent pipeline for that next generation within our egg industry and really educate the public at large, especially within the classrooms, where our food really comes from. You know, it's a prime example why last Friday I spent the day on the job with Wysocki Family Farms, learning about their operations, scouting fields, and learning about agronomy and just what it takes to, you know, from the time that seed goes in the ground, all the steps within the process from growing the crop to harvesting and then processing that. It's a big deal for this area of the state, and anything that we can do to increase our market share is going to not just benefit Wisconsin farmers, but it benefits the entire state.
I've said many times, and I'm a big believer, and I think everybody should at least work a day or a week in retail and know what that's like. I feel very similar to being on a farm. Everybody should experience like what it is like, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning till 7, 8, sometimes 9 o'clock at night being on a farm and what that life is like. And I think not only would that create some empathy, appreciation, but maybe even get more people interested in doing that work or doing that field. I think there's no way to mandatory everybody doing something like that, but I encourage people to do those things. I think it's something that you do similar to on the job, which is something you referenced a couple times there. What's your next project? What's your next gig?
Well, I think the next one that we've got lined up for month of August, I think that it's going to be a very early morning for me, but I believe I'm going to be working with Ducks Unlimited to ban ducks and then do some habitat restoration here in central Wisconsin, which I'm actually really excited about, because a few years ago, got to work with Ducks Unlimited and some of the conservation groups and some of our aid groups here in the area to do restoration work on the Little Plover River. And, you know, again, it's these collaborations, this team-based approach that really help move the needle on, you know, some of these issues that can sometimes be contentious. But when you work together, it takes a lot of that venom out of the bite, and you actually get results done, which, you know, from my tenure in the state Senate, that's what I've always tried to focus on, is let's get results, let's identify problems, find solutions, and then roll up our sleeves and get to work. And that's one of the things I love most about doing the on the job, is that you get to do just that and go work alongside people. And it just gives me a better perspective on how and what we do down in Madison impacts people both directly and indirectly back home.
We're speaking with Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Testin, at least I believe so. Sir, your phone has been acting up a little bit, and sometimes you sound a little computer-like, and with all this AI talk and everything, I am talking to Senator Testin, right? I'm just messing with you. We do appreciate you joining us, sir. You recently had some other people join you. The Rosholt FFA stopped by your office. How did that go?
Yeah, it went great. Unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to meet with them in person. They met with my staff, because at that time when they were down in the Capitol, we were actually taking up the state budget, and during part of that floor debate when they came down, I was actually up in the chair presiding over the Senate, but they got to come up and look outside the chamber and see me up in the Senate president's chair, which was kind of neat. But it's always great when folks from organizations like FFA and others like 4-H come down, because, you know, this is the next generation of leadership. And I don't like calling them future leaders, because they're already taking leadership roles mm-hmm. within their communities. And, you know, it's just great to see they may only be in middle school or high school, but it's almost like you're talking to an adult, because they're so mature. You know, they do such a wonderful job. They present themselves so well, and they're just hard workers. And that's what you love to see, because, you know, when you talk to employers so often these days, they tell you it's so hard to find, you know, help. And especially with, you know, younger workers, just the lack of soft skills. And yet, you know, individuals who are enrolled in these programs like FFA, like 4-H, they've already got the soft skills. They're mm-hmm. already on a path for future success, and they know how to work. And if you can do that, then the sky's the limit for you.
Well said. As much as I loved being in football and track and field, I love just as much being in debate and some of these other programs. Were you in any clubs in programs like that in school?
Not like that, no. Back in Marinette, I don't remember there being a ton of opportunities for that. I did football, track and field, and then I spent starting my sophomore year of high school working at a family restaurant in Menominee, Michigan, where I bused tables and then worked my way into the kitchen and became a line cook.
Is that especially when we were talking about education before, is that part of where that comes from, that your passion for that and creating more programs and things in rural communities?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, without question. I think any time that we can introduce individuals to different career paths and opportunities out there, you know, it really gives them a taste and flavor of what's available. And also, like, for instance, in the youth apprenticeship program, which we are actually able to successfully double that program, you know, because I've gone to some of the youth apprenticeship appreciation breakfast, like at the Portage County Business Council. And it's always great when the youth apprentices get up and they talk about their experiences. And oftentimes they've had great experiences and they want to continue on this career, that career path. Other times they'll get up and say, you know what, I'm glad I did this, but I found out, you know what, maybe this healthcare path that I was on isn't necessarily for me, so I'm going to transfer and try a different youth apprenticeship next year. And so, you know, it allows people to kind of test the waters without diving in head first into the pool without knowing if there's any water in it. So in those types of scenarios, you're either going to make a splash or a splatter, but, you know, when you give them a soft landing, it allows them to really kind of figure out what works best for them and kind of opens their eyes to experiences they otherwise would not have had. But more importantly, it gives employers a chance to invest in this future workforce. And so, you know, it's programs like these that Wisconsin has always been a national leader on. We need to continue to be a national leader on. And that's why I was so happy we were able to expand this program and double it.
One of the things that you brought up earlier with Ducks Unlimited got me thinking about, especially looking into this quite a bit for the last couple of years, really. Wisconsin has done better than most, especially our neighboring states, at bringing in tourism. We've stayed pretty consistent with that. We had some downtime a little bit ago, but it's pretty much back where it is. And the combination of conservation and tourism and being able to combine that, Wisconsin seems to do that very well. I think the most recent, the U.S. Open in Stevens Point, I thought that was a good example of that. Were you able to take in any of that?
Yeah, well, our tourism department, this is one of the departments that's probably one of my favorite departments, because it doesn't matter if it's a Republican governor's administration, a Democrat governor's administration, the tourism department, it's basically a nonpartisan agency. And, you know, because tourism, it's the department of fun. They get to go out and highlight all the great opportunities around the state. They get to highlight the tourism attractions that we have. And that's one of the primary reasons why we invested a significant amount of new money into our tourism department, because compared to some of their peers in places like the tourism department in Michigan and Minnesota, they have a lot more money thrown at those departments. But yet, from a metrics perspective, our tourism department has always punched above its weight class. And so we recognize that and, you know, put a lot more money into the tourism department to promote Wisconsin and attract new opportunities. Prime example, we're going to land Top Chef, which a few years ago we missed out on that opportunity. They went to a different state, but now they see the value in coming to Wisconsin to film the next season, which is truly exciting to highlight the culinary scene that we have. And you mentioned the Senior Open at Century World. I mean, who would have thought even 10, 15 years ago that Central Wisconsin would now be a golf destination between you know, the expansion and the investments made at Central World with what we got going on at Sand Valley, Lake Arrowhead. I mean, there are just so many great courses, and I never dreamed in a million years we'd have people flying all around the world to come into places like Alexander Field to then go play around the golf at Sand Valley and then come up the point and play around at Century World. It's truly incredible.
My Nan and Papa, my Papa, who first moved us up here when he retired and had a beautiful house in Rome, he loves that area so much. And whenever he's asking about how things are here now, one of his he's so excited about it. Before, it was just kind of like, well, a little curious. Now he's very excited because it's usually great news. It's such a good point that those of us that have been around this area for a while to see where it has developed and where it has gone is beautiful to see. And it's great. But how do you keep that momentum going?
Well, I think we continue to do what we can to keep moving the state in the right direction, but then more importantly, continue to be out there and to sell our story. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we face here in Wisconsin, is we're Wisconsin nice and we don't want to brag and you know, talk about all the wonderful things that we've got going on in our backyard, but we really have to. And you know, I think with some of the investments that we made within our tourism department, we're going to be able to do that a lot more, is go out there and go into new markets and sell Wisconsin and why it's such a great place to come recreate and visit. And it doesn't matter what you want to do. If you want to go fish, great. You want to play golf, awesome. We got plenty of opportunities for you. You want to go see some great music down at the Summerfest grounds, have at it. You want to go to some of the different cultural festivals that we have? Like, I always go to Irish Fest. I never miss it. It's a great time. There's just so much to do. The supper club scene. I mean, I could spend all day just talking about tourism here in Wisconsin, but, you know, it's going out there and knowing that we're in competition with other states, and I think we've got the best story to sell, and I'll keep saying that till the day I die, that this is truly the best state in the nation, and I firmly believe that Central Wisconsin is the best place to live, work, and raise a family.
Sir, I got to wrap up with a tough one. How was your birthday?
Birthday was great. In fact, I had so much fun on my birthday back in June that I sat at home and read budget papers all weekend, and it wasn't until after we got the budget done that I finally got to go out for a late birthday dinner, but it was good. 35 is off to a good start.
Very good to hear. Always appreciate the time, sir. If people have follow-up questions, they want to know more about some of the stuff we've talked about, or just reach out to you about other subjects, how can they best get a hold of you?
Yeah, if anyone needs to get a hold of us, if they have got any issues or ideas, feel free to contact our office at sen.mylastnameteston@legis.wi.gov, or drop us a line at 608-266-3123, or follow us on social media. Or if you see me out and about at a community event, feel free to pull me aside, and more than happy to chat anytime.
Always appreciate the time, sir. You be safe out there, and we'll catch up next month.
All right. Thanks, James, and you as well.
Thank you. Again, big thank you to Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston for joining us. Always look forward to the conversation. He'll join us again next month. We'll be back with more Midday Magazine right here at WFHR.